This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Stock up with Bud Light for game days and check out Budweiser's limited edition Copper Reserve. Please drink responsibly.
They're going to run and get that boost.
This game's still alive and the Hawks have a first down.
Who wants to talk football?
It's Ronnie Wingo, number 20. Touchdown, Arkansas.
They talk the bar.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
So what have you been doing, or do we want to know?
Partying. I'm living like a rock star.
Where's the party at on a Sunday night?
God made all the days equal, so I can get it in on Sunday just like I can get it in on Friday.
Well, we'll take your word for it, because I don't know if Tommy was at that same party that you were at last night.
I can assure you.
Yeah, that's probably not something that Tommy would go down that road, but either way, it's good to have you in, and it's good to have everybody listening in. This morning, hope everyone had a wonderful weekend, because there's a lot of things that we're going to react to this morning. And I guess it always starts with the basketball team and the performance that they have. SEC Big 12 Challenge. Big 12 went 6-4 against the SEC, which we'll talk about that more in depth here in just a little bit. But Texas Tech gets the victory over Arkansas, 3-point victory. For some reason, it looked like Arkansas was actually playing well, had a lead at halftime with Jalen Harris hitting a pretty deep three. They're on the road. It looked like things might have been going pretty well. Texas Tech, though, takes a pretty substantial lead there in the second half. Arkansas is unable to ever take a lead again. They got close. They were in position. Looked like there was a couple plays, especially down the stretch, like the foul on Mason Jones on the shooter. That was pretty important. Then, of course, that final possession that Arkansas had with the – I don't even know what that was exactly going on.
I'm still trying to figure it out.
I mean, that was – I understand if there was a play call, but then was it Embry Simpson, or does he say it was Simpson? I'm trying to remember. Yeah, it was him.
That kicked the ball,
which
but
such
I guarantee
a weird play.
I guarantee you, though, and I'd bet my life on this, whatever was drawn up in the huddle, if there's anything that was even drawn up, it never got to him getting the ball.
No.
So by the time he ended up getting the ball, he's like, oh, you know what? What am I supposed to do with it at this point? And that's one thing about having a young team. If you do, or an inexperienced point guard or inexperienced players, a lot of the time, whatever the coach says in the huddle, whatever he draws up or you know, whatever happens in the huddle, they don't know how to, if things break down or if something else is there, they don't know how to go with another option. Because I don't know if you guys watching the same thing I was watching. Gafford had his man pinned on his back for 5 seconds. For 5 seconds. And Jalen Harris stood there and stared at him for 3 or 4 seconds. And so my whole thing is, okay, so either one or two things. Either Jalen Harris screwed the play up, or they told them in the huddle, do not shoot anything besides a three. Mm-hmm. And now I just have a really, really, really tough time. I know a lot of us, I know a lot of people get on mic about not running a lot of sets, even though if you were watching the game closely, he ran a lot more sets in that game than he had run in previous games and in previous years. So I'm not buying that he said, oh, don't pass the ball to Gafford if he has – like, Gafford had 2 feet in the middle of the paint with his man pinned on his back where you could have threw it to him. He could have got a layup, and then you could have
down three. I mean
– I know, but with 20 seconds.
Okay. I thought you meant
– oh, no. Now, by the time
– I mean, Tech would have gladly given you a dunk inside with Gafford.
Yeah, but
– Ole. I mean, hands off, you know.
But – and by the time – that it got back around and the ball got kicked out of bounds. Yeah, it's too late at that point. But at the very, very beginning, for those of you that have DVR'd the game, at the very, very beginning, go back and watch how as soon as they come out the timeout and as soon as they take the ball out, they get it in. Jalen Harris just stares Gafford down. And I'm like, I don't know if this team doesn't know how to make post-entry passes. And I know that sounds comical, but there are a lot of times where I don't know if guys are thinking, okay, well, he's not open. But Gafford had 2 feet in the middle of the paint, had his man pinned. You could have threw it down there. You could have got a dunk or a layup or possibly even an and one. But at that point, there would have been 14 or 15 seconds left on the clock. And Tech just showed you that they can miss free throws because they missed the free throw to put you down three. So I really don't know what went on there at the end. You know, I don't have anybody necessarily to call and say, hey, what happened at the very end? But that was a disaster.
But it just seems like this is the same song, different verse for this basketball team. And a lot of these games that they lost, I know that there was a few games like Tennessee and Ole Miss that they weren't in it in the very end and they got blown out on the road. But how many games has this happened now where Arkansas has had issues, whether it's at the free throw line or having plays, and then at the end of the game, you're in position. You're in position to either take the lead or to tie it up or whatever. And then we sit here after the game's over and it's like, what was that?
What happened?
What happened? I mean, it's just, because listen, they didn't get a shot off. And that's what's the most disappointing thing about it. It's one thing if you have some, you know, if you got Mason Jones dribbling around and then firing a three. Is that the best shot? No, but at least it was a shot. Did not even get a shot off, though, and I know Mike Anderson was disappointed by that, too. That's what makes it so frustrating, is that you were in position. You had a good position. You were going to be able to at least get something off, and you didn't, and now it's become problematic once again.
Another thing I was worried about in the summertime about this basketball team, and something that you've seen in the past, you've had guys that can always get shots off, and you have guys that can close games out. And, you know, the last – And call it whatever you want, but the last 4 years, you've had some type of pro at the guard position. You've had either Dusty Hannes, you've had Daryl Macon, or you've had Jalen Barford, and there was one year where you had all three of them. And so you never really had to worry about being able to get shots off, being able to get attempts and get looks. Okay, right now, who's the best player on the team?
Gafford.
Yeah, okay, Daniel Gafford. So now, there's a big problem with him getting a shot off because he has to actually get the ball. You know, I mean, and he's not a guard. So really, end of games don't fare well for bigs, unless you're in the NBA.
Right.
But in college and down, unless you're running like a specific set for a big, a cross screen, down screen, a double screen, you know, a high slip, whatever, a screen and roll, whatever the case may be, you have to run something for a big. Now, the next best player on the team is either Mason Jones or Isaiah Joe.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Isaiah Joe scores all his points off of he's spotting up in the corner, somebody's driving, they're finding him in transition, those different type of things. So all of Arkansas's best players, I'm not telling you any of these guys are guys that can create for themselves. The one guy that can possibly create for himself is Jalen Harris, and I mean, I keep my fingers crossed every time that he doesn't kick the ball out of bounds.
Yeah.
And so, like, it's just, it's tough whenever you get in those, and this team is horrible at the end of games, end of halves, and late in the shot clock. This team is horrible. Why? Because their best players aren't creators. You have a big that, once again, needs the ball. Isaiah Joe, great shooter, is having a hell of a freshman year. But he's still relying on transition. He's still relying on defensive breakdowns. And Mason Jones, he can kind of find his way, but I still don't put him in the class of Daryl Macon, Jalen Barford, and Dusty Hannes when it comes to getting off attempts.
That's the problem, is that, you know, you mentioned that some of the players that they've had in the past, you know, it's almost like Arkansas fans have been spoiled a little bit. Not saying that they've always finished out every game.
Even Kai Madden.
But, yeah, even you had guy that even if he couldn't create,
right,
he got fouled and got to the free throw line, you count on him to make them. You know, and the same thing you had, whether it was Dusty Hannes or Daryl Macon or Jay, you always had that guy. And it's funny to think, because Arkansas making it to the tournament 3 out of the 4 years, a lot of that had to do with the fact that you could have these guys that could finish out these close games. Because for a while there, it seemed like Arkansas, when it was a one-possession game, They came out on top more often than not. And now you're seeing the complete opposite. I know that they've had some one possession or 1 point leads. I think Indiana was one that stood out, the one game that they won there. But now you're starting to see it to where, okay, when the game's on the line and Arkansas has the ball late in the game, I myself, and I know a lot of Razorback fans, are chalking up, say, man, they're not going to win, because they don't know what to do.
You'll feel like you can out-strategize anyone, and particularly a team that's one of the best defensive teams in the country.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what you were working on all, you know, you don't get all week, but a few days to get ready for this game. That is that a situation you would have gone through, Nick, in practice? All right, if we're down two or if we're down three and it's the final possession, here are the plays we want to, you know, we want to try to do one of these three things, one of these two things. Is that something? I know in football, you seem to work over more situations if you got one game a week to get ready for.
Right.
in basketball, it's a little different. So,
yes.
Is that against a team like Texas Tech time you would have spent?
You do, and a lot of that is more so in the off season, and then during the year, you may practice on it, and you may not, but Mike's just not a huge play guy, and he's not a huge situational guy. I know whenever Pelfrey was here, now Pelfrey was like the opposite. He'd spend a whole entire day. He'd lose a day of practice working on situations. He'd work on, you know, it's 10 seconds left and you're down five. He'd work on 10 seconds left and you're up three. Do you want to foul? Do you want to do those things? And he would spend an entire practice on that. Mike's just not a huge situational guy because his thing is more of, at that point, he wants to be in control of the game and he doesn't want to put himself in those positions. Well, regardless of what you want to do, that's still going to happen. So, yes, the players have seen that before. I just think that they don't work on that as much as maybe some other teams do. That's why they're not as good in that category, but they work on other things. That's why they're better, you know, in conditioning in other categories.
You know, it's weird to say, and we'll end on this. If I would have told you before this Arkansas-Texas Tech game that Arkansas was going to make and attempt more free throws than Texas Tech, out-rebound them, and has less turnovers than Texas Tech, you feel like they would win this game.
Follow the show on Twitter, at HitThatLineAR. You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Now he does a tightrope back. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
And so the thing I wanted to get into here is something we alluded to earlier in the show about Hunter Yurecek and just how we don't talk a lot about Hunter Yurecek. He's a different athletic director than what Jeff Long was already. Just because he's only been, 14 months he's been athletic director? 13?
13. He came in December.
Yeah, so just a little over a year.
Just a day or two before Chad Morris was hired. So yeah. December of the previous year. So.
Yeah, and he's not like a football coach where you can do a poll question. How do you think about the job that Hunter Yurecek has done in year one? I mean, because there just hasn't been any of those things that he's been able to get to just yet.
True.
But we do know that he came out when, it was first announced. One of the things that he said that really stuck with people, and I think impressed people, was that he says not winning should be a justifiable cause for firing a coach. And what he means by that is, you know, we hear about fired for cause. One of the causes should be able to be not winning enough games.
Mm-hmm.
And so he obviously feels very strong, at least based on that fact, based on what he said, he feels very strong about how winning is what needs to be done.
You know the political term when you're speaking to your base and you're giving them red meat, saying things to energize your base? He was making those comments at a time where Arkansas was facing paying Brett Bielema. We didn't even know at that moment. Is it $15 million? Is it $6 million? No one really knew at the moment he made those comments how much you were going to pay Brett Bielema. We've later found out it was on the high side of almost $12
million. $370,000 a month.
Yeah. It's $300,000 a month. And so, trust me, Scott Verity and Hunter Yurecek, Scott Verity's the head of the Arkansas Razorback Foundation, they're praying he gets this defensive coordinator spot to cut some of that down. Point being, that all excited fans at that point. I don't think you're going to see very many contracts unless the landscape of college athletics change. That's a great thought and a great sentiment that losing, not winning enough games is a fireable offense. How many coaches are going to sign that deal? Particularly at Arkansas when you don't have the pick of the litter. You're not just selecting coaches. You're having to recruit and hire coaches in the main sports, in the big sports. It's all sounds good and fine. I'll be shocked when I see the first contract with a football or a basketball coach that comes along and says, if you don't win this many games, you're fired and you get no money.
So I won't be shocked, but it goes back to what you just said. The people that are going to sign up for that is going to be the coaches at Arkansas State that are making a jump to Arkansas, or the coach at UAPB that's trying to make a jump.
You will hire an SEC-level coach under those terms.
No.
And you're just looking for someone to get their retirement in.
And I don't even agree with you, Tom, because I don't see.
It sounds good, and I agree with him, but if it starts happening, it will be a trend that's already taken place in college athletics.
And here's the thing.
I agree with his sentiment, because where else? If you're a salesperson and you don't sell, you don't get to stay.
Yeah.
I don't care where you're at, what you're selling. That's the way it works. If you're a coach, you should be winning. If you're not winning, you shouldn't stay, but you shouldn't get paid to leave either.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing that I think I'm looking at it more from the perspective of if he truly has that mentality, where I don't think that there's going to be a time where you hire a big-time SEC-level coach and he completely signs up and says, oh, sure, yeah, I agree. If I don't win enough, fire me, and I won't even get paid a dime for doing it.
I'm going to take the money.
No, no one's going to agree to that.
No.
But I think it's just him having that mentality where he's saying, I think that was a nice breath of fresh air for Razorback fans, where he's saying, you know what?
It was
winning
red meat.
Winning should be everything, because that's when something that they felt like under Jeff Long wasn't priority number one was winning. Because there was a lot of other things that was smoke and mirrors getting thrown up about, hey, check out the grades, check out how kids aren't getting in trouble, check out how much money we're bringing in, all that stuff, which is all well and good, but when it comes down to it, fans looked around at the athletic department, they're like, what our two main sports aren't producing the way that they need to produce.
I think priority number one's always winning.
Has to be.
But whenever you start losing, you have to look at other avenues. Or whenever you're not winning at the same clip or the same rate that the fans want you to win, you have to buy time. And so, yeah, I think that that's always the priority. And I also think that Hunter was I think it was talking season.
Yeah.
And he knew because you got to think, he came into a baseball coach that just went to the College World Series, the national championship game, and was an out away from winning the whole thing. A girls basketball coach that was just hired, can't do anything about that. A men's basketball coach that had been to the tournament 3 out of the last 4 years, and then a football coach that was just hired. So he was coming into, and he could basically say anything, because it's not like he realistically, unless somebody pulled a Petrino, he couldn't make any moves anyway.
Mm-hmm. But he was also coming into an era where the Razorback Foundation was not only paying a buyout guarantee to the head football coach that was just fired, but the athletic director too.
Yeah.
So
it's like, what else is he going to say? But just like you said, let's see what happens at the end of this basketball season.
Mm-hmm.
And if Mike Anderson has a losing season, or if he's 500, and there are a lot of people that are saying they don't care even if he does have another winning season. If you're not back in the tournament, there are a lot of people that are ready to move on if you're not back in the tournament, and even more people that are ready to move on if you can't make it out of the first or second round.
Because a lot of people, I think, not only if they don't make the tournament next year, they're not making it next year. Like, there's no reason to believe that next season, okay, well, don't worry, this year's going to be bad, but next season they got a bunch of JUCOs coming in, like with Barford and Macon. They don't have that.
No.
So there's just not a lot of hope in the program right now. And that's the thing, is you grade athletic directors. Well, you say if an athletic director is good, just from the fan perspective of what type of hires did he make?
Yeah.
And that was the one thing that, you know, say what you want about Jeff Long. I know what, but at the time he made a pretty strong first impression when his first major hire was Bobby Petrino as the head football coach.
Yeah.
Now, I know that everyone will say, well, it fell into his lap. It doesn't matter. He made the hire. And that's what really impressed
him. Yeah, it doesn't matter how you get the deal done. You close the deal.
That's right. And so it gave a lot of clout there for Jeff Long, because there was a lot of people up until the firing of Bobby Petrino, and you can, I don't know if you want to disagree with me or not, but up until the firing of Bobby Petrino, there was a lot of Razorback fans that thought Jeff Long was a rock star of an athletic director, because he was able to pull that off, and the Mike Anderson hire.
And I think that was part of the reason all of it didn't work in the end, is because there was a rub, because the head coach, even though he wasn't as extroverted as the guy that followed him ultimately, Bielema, he wasn't as outwardly charismatic. He was the rock star.
Yes. He ran
and
the show.
I'm telling you, there was some contention there between the head coach and the athletic director for the power struggle of popularity in this state. And ultimately, I think that played a role, a factor in to how it all worked out. I mean, that, because there wasn't the bond, the personal relationships.
And see,
because it's rare that you see an AD be the rock star at a school. Only Jeff Long. I mean, now Frank Broyles was, but for many other reasons.
Right.
Jeff Long was a star in this state.
He's never even a coach.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And see, and that right there is why that's why it's justifiable for why Jeff Long's not here anymore. Because as long as he was going to have that mentality, they were never going to be good, because it doesn't matter if Brett Bielema came in and started winning SEC titles or playing for him, he was going to be the rock star. He was going to surpass Jeff Long every time.
True. But we're sitting here saying, well, we don't know about this Hunter Yurecek guy. What's he really thinking? Wonder how he's evaluating this basketball deal. Wonder what he thinks of Mike Anderson. Who would he hire if he let him go? We're having all these thoughts and conversations because we don't know. Well, he's not out there talking to the people the way Jeff Long did. He's not this and that compared to Jeff. Well, I think there's also probably been some directive and some order from on high. Hey, we don't want our AD quite as out there this time.
Yeah,
we want our AD to fit more in the normal AD box where,
and that's the way it should be, honestly,
where it's traditionally done.
And even talking to the people.
And I never had a problem with what Jeff Lohm was doing. I'm just saying it was not the norm that the AD was as front and center as he was when Jeff Lohm was here. And we're seeing a return to the norm with Hunter Yurecek. We just got so used to it for 10 years,
yeah,
more or less, with Jeff Lohm. This is how an AD conducts business. Very publicly, very outwardly, very much marketing himself as much as the program. And we're not seeing that now. So it seems weird to us now.
Mm-hmm.
This is normal.
What's going to be interesting is this. There's two different ways that you can look at this basketball thing. Are you going to project? So a lot of fans are done now because they're projecting, okay, this is what you're not going to do. Like, if you can't make it this year, there's no way that you're going to make it next year. Are you on that side or are you on the side of wait and see? Also, too, I want to warn everybody, and you know, it doesn't matter to me what happens. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be something to talk about. But there are also two different sides of there are a lot of people, because you talk about Frank Martin and you bring up Avery Johnson and you bring up Bruce Pearl. If you go and look at what Bruce Pearl's actually done while he's at Auburn, I mean, it's now, and don't get me wrong, he got him ranked very, very high last year. But, I mean, it's not like he's been to four tournaments in 4 years.
He's not setting the world on fire.
He's not setting the world on fire. If you go look at Frank Martin, they were only good that 1 year. It's not like he's been to a tournament every single year. So the fans that I'm hearing the most of are saying, we don't give a crap about the overall, you're going to the tournament every year, you don't have a losing season. All we want is Sweet 16s, Elite 8s, Final 4s. And if that means that we trade an Elite 8, a Final 4, or a Sweet 16, because Frank Martin hadn't done anything in South Carolina outside of that 1 year. But there are people out there that say, we'll take that 1 year and we'll be in the NIT or not very good for 5 or 6 years if we can go to the Final Four one time. And so I just want to caution everybody in saying, just because you get a coach that's able to get you to the Sweet 16 one time or able to get you to the Elite Eight or the Final Four doesn't necessarily mean that they're also going to be able to be in the tournament 8 out of 9 years. And now I'm not saying that Mike Anderson is doing that, but it's not saying that they're going to be able to be in a tournament 3 out of 4 years and that they're going to be able to get you to a Final Four. So I'm really interested to see what Hunter, how he looks at this. And is he one of those guys that's saying, yeah, I'm with you guys. We need a basketball coach that's going to be able to get us to the Sweet 16, get us to the Elite 8, get us to the Final Four. Or is he going to be a guy, I just want to consistently be in the tournament and I want a good, clean program and that's going to be the decision that he has to make. And then is he going to project? Is he going to say, okay, this team's going to be not back in the tournament next year either, so I'm going to fire Mike Anderson now and move on?
Yeah, because it's going to come down to what decision that he wants to make as athletic director. We'll end on this. I feel like right now the basketball program is the only program that's probably going to, or the next program that's going to have a big decision.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes. You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Give is to Alex Collins straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas, 80 yards.
Well, obviously, every weekend, there is a lot of things going on in the sports world and sometimes not in the sports world, but there are great things. There are also horrible things. So that's why we use this time on Monday to get in the best and the worst of the weekend.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
We the best.
This is the worst.
It's time for the best and worst of the weekend.
All right, I'll go ahead and kick us off as far as the best thing of the weekend that I saw. Besides, I guess, can I use my steak? We already talked about it. It was the best thing I saw. The best thing I ate. The best part of my day or part of my weekend was definitely eating a 3-pound steak. I didn't eat all 3 pounds, but still, it was pretty amazing. So, but it is amazing, though. Actually, the best thing that I saw, though, and I'll say this, and Tommy, I'm just going to admit some stuff on the air here. You can berate me afterwards. On Friday night, I called the Hot Springs Trojans basketball game.
I heard a little bit of that.
I saw that.
Yeah. And I hadn't done play-by-play for basketball in a long time. I used to do Bentonville basketball way back when Malik Monk was there, actually. So
how long has it been?
All the good guys were sick?
About 4 years.
Say, I'd have guessed eight, but just listening.
Yeah, well, 4 years, you know, wasn't very kind to me, apparently. So, anyways, I'm calling.
How did you end up doing that, though? Like,
we needed somebody to do it.
Yeah.
So, I was available. We were down there at Oaklawn on Friday anyway, so.
It just made sense.
Had to get back into it to see how it goes.
Well, crap, if I was paying somebody when I was paying him, yeah, I'd make him do everything.
I guess, yeah, that's going to be the running joke here. But anyways, my point is that when I was down there, you know, I was calling the game by myself. When he was my friends were in the area, and they're like, hey, man, what are you doing? And I was like, well, I'm on Hot Springs Trojan basketball. And they had no idea that it was going on. And they're like, well, we're down in this area, so let's see if you want to hang out or something. I was like, my buddy Devin. I was like, Devin, you've always wanted to do radio broadcasting.
I was wondering how all your friends had headsets on.
And I was like, you wanted to be a color commentator? And he goes, yeah, why? And I was like, don't be my color guy here on the broadcast.
You called Devin and not me?
Like, you would have showed up. You were probably in Vegas outside partying with some people.
I'd be your color guy.
I'll remember that next time. Okay, I'll give you a phone call. Okay. Anyways, so they come in, and my buddy Devin was my color commentator, and of course it was just funny to see him doing it, but it was kind of a joke because I kept telling everybody he was the all-time assist leader at Little Rock Catholic. Never played basketball there. So, but anyways, because I told Tommy that too. I was like, he was the all-time assist leader at Little Rock Catholic. Nobody believed it. Yeah. So, but anyways.
Nobody knows.
But it was funny. He actually did a pretty good job for the most part. He kept stats up because he's a big stat guy and all that. So it was made it fun because it's one thing to be able to, it's fun to call a game anyways, but when you get to call it with your friends and just kind of hang out and, you know, spit a little bit. Entertaining games, too. So.
Uh-oh, Benjamin Kelly, look out.
Yeah, watch out. Watch out for me and Devin Bradley. Going to be coming up in
Manny Watkins and Benjamin Kelly, look out.
Yeah, I'm going to take Chuck Barrett and Coach Z's job.
Yeah, we got to get
terrible
Coach Z about
call,
it.
Terrible call, Chuck. That's a terrible call.
Yeah, I got to get Devin to work on that and start screaming at the officials because that's what makes a good color commentator when you do that. So, anyways, that was a lot of fun, though. That was definitely the best thing I saw over the weekend. All right, Tommy, what do you got?
Best or worst, which one do you want?
Whichever one you want.
Worst of the weekend, the Patriots send-off. Tom Brady, what are you doing?
We're still here! We're still here! We're still here! We're still here!
God almighty.
We're still
that here. Might be the worst thing I heard and saw over the weekend was the Patriots are good at everything.
Yes, they are.
Except send-offs for Super Bowls. They were not good at that.
They get people to show up somehow, though.
That was one of the worst things I saw this weekend. And then anytime the Pro Bowl's on, we got to mention the Pro Bowl. Rainy, nasty. It's in Orlando, which I guess for the players, they like that because they don't have to fly to Hawaii and fly 35 other people that want to go to Hawaii on their dime. So it's probably a better deal in that regard. But the Pro Bowl, of all the all-star games, that's got to be the hardest one to watch and really enjoy because the two best teams are still playing in the Super Bowl. You got to see Breeze and Mahomes for a while.
Yeah.
But really just not that to me is not very appealing,
well,
is the Pro Bowl itself because the players aren't out there trying to make it happen.
Well, the thing is like, Tommy, we're going to tag team this one because this was actually my worst of the weekend too and piggybacking off of that. Surely there is some better way to have a Pro Bowl / All-Star game. Because here's the thing, I'll start comparing it to other professional leagues. Like the NBA All-Star game, not that great. But people love the slam dunk contest. People love the three-point competition. Like it has something else going along with it. Not because if it was just the game, I think people would watch it, but it just, okay, whatever. Baseball has the same thing. They have the home run derby, which is like a secondary thing that gets people least interested. And it has, I guess it's a little thing too where, you know, it was always about whoever won the game, that whichever league wanted the game, they would have the home field advantage. But they got to do something else instead of the Pro Bowl. Like, have some sort of competition that would be fun. Have a hot dog eating competition with the offensive linemen. Just something like that that could be better suited for this. Because the football game is not a football game. It's playing flag football. And it's not like anyone gets anything out of it. Like, what do you get out of it? Nothing.
Yeah. So my best of the weekend, and I just retweeted this at Tommy Kraft ESPN on Twitter. Jason Witten, that poor guy, not only had a rough call on the game, but then he goes to present the Pro Bowl trophy when it's all over. It's And as the caption says from Vic Lombardi, who's been with the Saints, poor year for Jason Wynn. He picks the trophy up, not by the base, but by the top. Did y'all see this?
Yeah, it just pops right off.
Pulled the trophy in half. Broke the trophy. That might be the best thing I saw of the weekend.
He's not very good at things right now. I mean, because...
Well, then earlier in the game, he had said...
Wide receiver.
He promises Mahomes guy all year. He plays for the Colts.
Yeah.
And he plays for the Chiefs.
Yeah,
God almighty.
Yeah, you talk about a guy that's just ways of how he's calling it.
I'm not going to throw any stones in glass houses about getting things wrong, but... Geez.
He's bad. He's just bad all around. Maybe he'll get better, but he's just been really bad.
Picking up the trophy, and hey, I had to watch it twice to realize what he'd done, because the base, he just picked it up kind of by the top of it, and the trophy came apart in two pieces.
Yep. Well, who picks up a trophy that way? Like, can you not understand how heavy those things are? I don't know. I don't get it. It was terrible. Nick, do you have a best and the worst of the week?
Yeah, my best was in the Pro Bowl, Jalen Ramsey catching a touchdown pass. He was so excited. I mean, I think that probably was the best moment in his life. So I thought that was pretty cool.
I will admit that was actually a good thing of the Pro Bowl, is that they did have like players playing random positions and stuff like that. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. Another best of the weekend, and I know that we aren't just a huge NBA show and there's not like a lot of NBA fans out there, but it is unreal how good the Warriors are.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
And I watched them beat the Celtics, and it seems like the Warriors weren't even trying, and then like the last minute and a half, 2 minutes, they're like, okay, well, we're gonna try the last minute and a half in 2 minutes. And the fact that I'm not sure if I would take, I think like tomorrow, if they scrimmaged, I would take the Warriors over the Eastern Conference All-Stars. Like, if you scrimmage the starting five from the Warriors versus the starting five from the Eastern Conference All-Stars, I'd probably take the Warriors.
Because it is an All-Star team, essentially.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, Draymond Green.
They have five guys that will receive a max within the next couple of years, or either are already under a max or are going to receive a max contract in the next couple of years. And they're all in their primes. I mean, who has five, and Draymond Green is like really overrated, but who has four? They have four superstars. I mean, that's just, you know,
it's unfair. But it's not like you can hate on it. I mean, people want to see changes there. But
I would
love
for that to be my, but that's just Alabama, you know.
Yeah.
Or Kentucky.
Except Alabama gets beat every now and then.
Yeah, right.
I mean, see, and that's the thing, too, is like, you think like, oh, maybe finally Golden State's good, but they just keep adding players. Like, they added DeMarcus Cousins.
DeMarcus freaking Cousins.
Like
the one chance you had was if you can bang them down low and out-rebound them and be a lot more physical, and then they go add a top three center in the league.
Yep. I mean, it's just...
Good luck.
And things are not going to stop. I bet you anything, there'll be more players coming in. More all-star players will be coming in. So, yeah, it's just really...
But somehow, the NBA Finals will still go six or seven games.
I don't know if it will this year. Now that LeBron's not in the East anymore.
I don't know. Because
and somehow the Lakers will... Somehow in the NBA, all of this still works out to make it as intriguing as it can be in June and July.
Oh, it's rigged, though. So, I mean...
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. It definitely is.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Like the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast? Check out the Halftime Pod and Ruskin is Ranting podcast on HitThatLine.com.